Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
People have continually asked me to not move this amendment. To what hill do you die on? And I choose you. I choose you as my hill to die on. I'm sorry this is happening to you. With my whole heart.
Today we send a message to every parent in Arizona. We see you, we hear your concerns, and we're taking action to protect your children. To every student, you deserve clean, safe food, and now you'll get it. And to other states watching what we've done here, follow Arizona's lead.
They're a company that is here, they want to stay here, they are creating jobs, and not only that, they are now helping to address the affordable housing crisis by using the state land that they bought to build housing to house their workforce.
We have adopted secularism as the religion of our country, and we need to work against that.
The best way of getting these agreements is not by threatening our allies, not by bullying our allies, but by sitting at the table and having trade negotiations.
And joining me to talk about the governor issuing a moratorium on new bills, the debate over a measure on Axon's proposed new campus, and more are Paul Bentz of HiGreg. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to you.
Great to be here.
So, Paul, let me start with you on the latest ratcheting up of this controversy over funding for the Division of Developmental Disabilities. This has been going on for a few weeks now. It's slated to run out of money in just a couple of weeks now if it doesn't get an infusion of cash. Both the House and Senate Appropriations Committee held hearings this week on a bill that would give the agency the money to do this, but it came with a number of other restrictions that Democrats and the governor and some Republicans also don't like.
Sure. I mean, one of the challenges was that there was a bipartisan solution on the table, and instead of adopting that, the chairman added three additional legislators to the panel just to ensure that it wouldn't succeed. And some of the cuts that they're proposing, including cutting parents' time that they can be paid to help take care of their children in half, is some of the things that the governor hasn't stood for. And now she's evoked what some folks are calling the nuclear option. She is saying that until this issue gets solved, she's going to veto every bill that comes across her desk.
Yeah, Sam, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of bad will and bad blood on each side of this one.
Absolutely. And I think what's really unfortunate is there are real people in the middle of it, right? These are tens of thousands of families and individuals that require extraordinary care, and their parent caregivers are there to do that. And it's not because they're looking for an extra couple of bucks. It's because there aren't people who know the child and know the care that these children require. And what's happened is legislative leaders at the Capitol have really turned this into a very unfortunate football. It was an issue that needed to be addressed. And there were some real honest and serious solutions on the table. And I think the fact that those weren't taken up with, you know, integrity, I think says a lot about the state of affairs at the Capitol.
Sam, I want to ask you about the issue that Paul brought up, which was that the House Republican leadership added members to the Appropriations Committee essentially to make sure that this amendment by Representative Julie Willoughby, we heard from her in tears during the montage there, to make sure that her amendment, which had bipartisan support, would not pass. This is something that we see from time to time at the Capitol, right? Like, members are added to committees for particular reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, just a couple other things that I would say there. One, this is an issue area and a policy area that Representative Willoughby knows. Healthcare and Human Services is one that she's really dedicated a lot of her time and energy and understanding in her tenure at the Capitol. But the other thing that's interesting is Representative Willoughby is not a rank and file backbencher. She is the whip of the majority caucus. So not only did she bring a serious bipartisan proposal to the table to be considered in that committee, she was rolled by her own leadership, and she is in leadership. I think that what, you know, is going to happen over the course of the next few days and weeks in response to that action is going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, that could be really interesting. It's a good point that Representative Willoughby is in leadership, and as Sam said, her own leadership did not support her on this.
That's right. And it's just one of the things that folks are really sort of fed up with when you look at the legislative shenanigans. Only 35% of the electorate think the state is headed in the right direction. And this is one of the things that we see, not focused on the issues that matter most. Dealing with this issue and moving on to the other items of the day seems like it'd be an easy fix, bipartisan slam dunk, and be willing to say, look, these are the things we can get together on and agree on so that the differences play out. But, you know, Republicans are not wasting this opportunity. They're making a point about it, and they're trying to use it as leverage. Meanwhile, things like Prop 123, the budget itself, those issues are not being addressed because we're mired in these types of controversy where they're playing games.
Well, so let's talk about the governor's step here, which she took, which other governors before her have taken. I mean, Governor Brewer said, don't send me any bills, I'll veto them, when she was waiting for a budget and Medicaid expansion. Governor Ducey, of course, did this as well. He actually did veto a bunch of bills while waiting for a budget. Governor Hobbs has said, if the budget has already been sent to me, those are excluded. Those don't count. If you send me anything new, I'm going to veto them. Does she get her way on this?
Well, I mean, I think it's a smart move by the governor. We've seen other governors use it, Republican governors, so it's hard to decry it.
And it tends to work.
It does. And they also, they are decrying it. And, you know, Livingston said some things about her in her ivory tower drinking wine or something like that. It's gotten to the level here where she's done what, you know, folks has already said is the nuclear option. It's generally really effective. And so she's going to take action on the bills that arrived before yesterday. And then now from here on out, she's basically challenging them to forward things. Democrats took it a step further by actually voting no on things that they might even wanted to support in solidarity with the governor.
Well, so, Sam, we heard just before Representative David Livingston, the chair of the Appropriations Committee, saying she's not going to get her way. So, like, something's got to give here.
Yeah, I think that it's really easy to believe that when you have the gavel in a certain moment of time. But I'm not sure that Chairman Livingston is going to get his way either. I think that there's going to be perhaps solutions that we haven't even discussed publicly at the legislature or around the legislature that are going to start to show themselves in the coming days and weeks.
I mean, it kind of has to happen in the coming days, right? I mean, the money runs out at the end of the month.
Absolutely. It is an urgent need. I was more kind of speaking to the fact that I think the power position and the kind of the puffing of the chest of saying the governor's not going to get her way is not going to bear well for any future conversations. As Paul mentioned, we still have, you know, an $18 billion budget to negotiate. We have, you know, education funding that faces a fiscal cliff coming up here shortly. And there's a lot of big, important issues that we need to be discussing. And this should have been taken care of 3 months ago when it was first identified as an issue.
One more thing on this I want to ask you guys about, which is that recall petitions have been taken out against four members of the House, the House Speaker, Steve Montenegro, the Majority Leader, Michael Carbone, and Representative David Livingston, and also the Chairman of the House Health Committee, Matt Gress. Sam, like we've only had one lawmaker actually recall. That was Russell Pierce after SB 1070. This seems like a particularly steep hill to climb, but you also have some pretty motivated people, some pretty ticked off people here.
Yeah, and I think between elections, this is the moment and the tool that citizens have to kind of signal their broad-based disgust, frankly, with the direction of the leaders at the legislature. And just one point of clarification, Representative Gress is the chairman of the Education Committee.
So
one thing on recalls, they're incredibly difficult. You need 25% of the total vote for the past election. So, I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands of signatures in a short period of time. You have 120 days to gather them. Even after the 120 days, we're talking about having a recall election right before the actual election next year, before these guys are reelected again. So it's more of a display of disgust, as Sam mentioned. It's more of a challenge to bring attention to an issue. But I do suspect this problem will be solved. Our legislature doesn't really waste a good crisis. They're just like, you know, other folks, they cram before the test. You know, last you know, good deadline. We've got a good deadline. Hopefully they'll come together and find the solution. The governor has said, bring me something that I can support. So, but the challenge is she probably needs to be at the table as well. This isn't just a keep bringing things back to me until you give me something I like. I think they need to sit down and negotiate.
Well, and that's one of the issues that Republicans have been criticizing the governor over, is that you're not at the table. You won't negotiate. You're not meeting with us. I wonder if that is telling in any way, talking about things like the budget or Prop 123, like things that are going to need negotiation and bipartisan buy-in. If Republicans are not happy with the governor's level of involvement on this, does that say anything about the other things we have to do this year, Paul?
Well, it also speaks to what do they determine as negotiation? I mean, what's the definition?
Sure.
Is. I mean, like, they're saying they're negotiating, quote unquote, but are they really truly negotiating as well? I mean, in some of these situations, you look at the position that they're starting at, it's also an unreasonable position. Mm. So really, we're so far apart on these things that I don't know if anybody's walking into this negotiations really with good intentions. And so it's really a level setting exercise. The things like this, it seems like it would have been an easy way to get some of these challenges like this out of the way so they could deal with the bigger problems. But they seem to want to fight about everything.
Yeah. And I would also just add that I don't think that is a universal belief that there is a lack of willingness to negotiate or even have an open door policy. If you ask other leaders or just look at the demonstrable results of bills that the governor has signed so far, you know, I think that we'll talk a bit later about a member of the legislature who has had a very important piece of his own legislation signed while at the same time another bill that he marked as a priority piece of legislation vetoed. I think that there was probably some negotiations and some conversations that happened as a part of that. I think leaders in the housing policy world are very well aware of how open and forward the governor's office is in active negotiations, as in with land use and water policy. So I think that if you come to the table with integrity and honesty and openness, I think that would be received by the governor's office. And I think that if Chairman Livingston isn't receiving that, then maybe take a look at the motivations that brings them to the table and start there.
So, Sam, you kind of teased this just before the break. State Representative Leo Biasucci of Lake Havasu City had two bills that went to the governor dealing with the so-called Make America Healthy Again movement. One was signed, one was not. The bill that was signed would prohibit ultra-processed foods from being in school lunches. The governor, though, vetoed a bill that would have prohibited people on SNAP, commonly referred to as food stamps, from buying soda with those benefits. Any surprises here?
No, none at all. I think that, you know, the seeds of Mr. Biasucci's bill on healthy school lunches, you can even point back to shadows of administrations passed federally that kind of talked about the importance of healthy food and responsible diets starting at the public school level. And I think the other bill, what we're talking about, was very disparaging towards individuals that receive these SNAP benefits. And I think that no one necessarily disagrees that you know, soda is something that we should limit in our diets. But I think the natural effect of signing that bill would have created a second class or an underclass of purchasers of these products. And I think that was the sole reason why the governor vetoed that.
Well, and Paul, I mean, on a very political level, one of these bills had bipartisan support and one did not.
Absolutely. And I think that's sort of the challenge. It's ironic that the Republicans who have a president who has a Diet Coke button in the White House is the ones trying to ban soda for other individuals. It's also, you know, it's something just sort of that limiting factor, while it is probably the healthy solution, it's just interesting that that's the type of issues that they're planning to push. On the healthy school lunch issue, it certainly did have bipartisan support. It certainly makes a lot of sense. The challenge is, where does that money come from for healthier items? Some of these items that we're talking about, ultra processed, unfortunately, generally is a little bit cheaper. That's why people default to it, because schools are limited in their funding. And you know, the other question I really have is, when it comes to education issues like this, are these the issues that are front of mind, top of mind, that people are caring most about when it comes to education? When we have, as Sam talked about, a fiscal cliff coming for one of our large education funding initiatives, Prop 123, that reaches expiration. We also have an aggregate expenditure limit that will come up year after year because there's no permanent solution to that. Are we really caring what's in the school lunches while we have these much, much bigger education issues to address?
It's an interesting point. I mean, there's certainly research that suggests that, you know, students, for example, who are hungry, you know, who don't have breakfast or don't have a solid lunch, don't learn as well. Like, we learn better when we are, our bodies are sated, as it were. I mean, to Paul's point, like, are these really the top of mind education issues in Arizona?
Yeah, I would say that the funding definitely should be a, you know, an integrated part of every one of these conversations. Although I will say that I trust our legislative leaders to aspire to being able to walk and chew cinnamon bark at the same time.
maybe sugar-free gum.
That's right, sugar-free gum. But I think that, you know, that is an interesting conversation when we talk about, I mean, I think The count, the last time I looked, was somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,850 unique pieces of legislation that were filed in this legislative session alone. Not all of those ideas are serious and, you know, really going to move the needle in important topics. Every now and again, you have an issue like this that, while important in kind of an esoteric way, also catches fire and brings people like, you know, RFK Jr. and celebrity doctors like Dr. Amen here to the Capitol to talk about the importance of moving these policies forward. But I do think that it isn't an either or. It can be a both end. And I think that that's also why you saw the governor sign this, not just because it had bipartisan support, but because this is a piece of a broader conversation in responsible education.
All right. So, Paul, the governor also has a bill on her desk dealing with Axon, which is the taser, the company that makes taser stun guns and body-worn cameras that police departments use. It's an interesting bill because Axon wants to build a new headquarters with a hotel and shops and everything, and that seems fine with everybody. Folks in Scottsdale, though, at least some of them, are not thrilled about the proposal to include a number of apartments on this land. They don't want it. The city council approved it. A number of residents collected signatures to refer it to the ballot. Axon CEO said, if we have to wait for this, we're leaving, we're out of here. This is a homegrown company. So now the legislature has come in and basically said, you can do this in Scottsdale. And it's a very interesting topic because it sort of pits economic development versus local control.
It's an incredibly challenging topic. I mean, the other thing that the residents are forgetting is that Axon could sell it to Amazon tomorrow and put a huge fulfillment center on that property without any additional vote, without any additional change. And so the question is, do they want it? Semi-trucks full of Amazon goods and drones leaving every minute, or would they rather the apartments? But, you know, as you mentioned, Axon's a multi-billion dollar company, and certainly it was homegrown, and we don't have a ton of those homegrown corporate headquarters here. On the other hand, you're talking about local control and local government and ensuring that folks have a say in what's built in their communities. And it speaks to the broader housing debate in general. I mean, like, there's sort of this anti-apartment sentiment going around, but at the same time, you know, what should the local community be in charge of, and what sort of say should they have in what's being built in their neighborhoods?
And interestingly, Sam, the city council that approved this last year is not, many of them are not still on the city council, and the many members of the new council don't love the proposal by Axon, and yet the entire city council and the mayor, who don't really agree on a lot of things, all signed a letter to the governor asking her to veto this.
Yeah, and I think that points to some of what Paul was talking about, that the complexity of the intersection of local control and really these national, if not international, conversations around business attraction. You know, we had governors of Texas and Florida really publicly talking about, hey, Axon, if it doesn't work out there, come on.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have spots open. And if you know, if those folks are being vocal, there's a dozen, if not, you know, three dozen invitations that they got privately. And I think that's really where a lot of the energy was focused on, not necessarily about this kind of fundamental or philosophical conversation around local control versus statewide concern. It was more of, what does this do? What chilling effect does this have in the economic development successes that Sandra Watson and the Arizona Commerce Authority have had over the last decade plus in bringing things like TSMC and the expansion of Intel and, you know, Amcor and all these incredible, really great announcements? What does that do to the pipeline of companies that are looking to Arizona?
Do either of you see this as a continuation of the state's attempts to sort of strong arm, I think, is to pointed a phrase, but sort of overtake cities in terms of what they are allowed and not allowed to do? We've seen this with housing. We've seen this with other issues. Paul, do you see this in the same category?
We see it in a lot of things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the challenge. But to Sam's point, what he was saying is, you know, a decade ago when we were doing polling, jobs was the number one issue facing the state. People, anything that had to do with jobs or job creation was incredibly popular. And then since that time, what we've seen is the state be incredibly successful in attracting new jobs, attracting major investment, and attracting international business. And if something like this is to go through and it is rejected, you know, this notion that Arizona is not open for business, when you add in other elements like the Coyotes deal being rejected and these things, you know, we get sort of that Florida reputation. What's going on in Arizona? You know, and I think we're trying to avoid the Florida reputation. So, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's going on here. But certainly, the legislature is very interested, despite their hatred of the federal government and what the feds tell them to do. They sure do like to tell cities what to do.
Yeah, and I would just say, I think that maybe if the result of this kind of very multifaceted conversation results in an opening up of the dialogue on what is local control and what is statewide concern, I think that's a big win, because I personally believe that the city of Tempe or the town of Bisbee should be able to ban plastic bags if they'd like to, right? Or ban, you know, puppy mills in their malls, mm-hmm. right? But I do think that some things like business attraction and other issues should be of statewide concern, and a local municipality shouldn't say this multi-billion dollar company can't build what they want to build in our backyard.
Well, and quickly, guys, with the caveat that none of us are actually lawyers, nor do we play one on the radio, there is also the question that some have raised about, is this special, you know, interest legislation, you know, targeting one company, which is not allowed.
That's right. I think there are some big questions around that. And that's all I'll say, because as you pointed out, I'm not a lawyer.
I'm not a lawyer either. And it's certainly I suspect there'll be a lawsuit in the future no matter what.
Well, which kind of raises the question of, you know, if the part of the goal of this was to foreclose on the election and sort of get a final answer quickly, lawsuits, you know, the wheels of justice do not move all that quickly all the time. So I wonder if in some way Axon is still going to be sort of stuck in the state of limbo, not quite knowing what the final result's going to be.
Yeah, that will be an interesting thing to play out. But I do think that if the governor signs it, and I think that the clock has started because it has been transmitted to her desk. So mm-hmm. sometime by the, you know, middle of next week, we'll know what that decision is. And if Axon is given the opportunity to stay, I think that they'll fight tooth and nail to do so.
All right. So we have about 45 seconds left. Are either of you putting yourselves up as candidates to be the next coach of the Suns? Paul?
No, thanks.
It might just be a one-year gig, though.
Well, if I can get the three-year contract and only work 1 year, I'll take that.
All right, yeah. Sam?
I'm a baseball guy first and foremost, and Tori's doing a great job with the Snakes this year so far.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Sam Richard, Paul Benz, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.